It's been nearly a year since Russia invaded Ukraine. President Volodymyr Zelensky is now seeking more weapons and hoping to join the European Union. But what can EU membership offer? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Mohammed Jamjoum. For the first time since Russia invaded Ukraine nearly a year ago, President Volodymyr Zelensky has been able to tour Europe. He's using the opportunity to thank European leaders for their support, but has also doubled down on his request for more military assistance. Zelensky is also seeking an expedited process to join the EU. He says Ukrainians are fighting on behalf of all Europe and has warned against an impending Russian offensive. We'll get to our guests in a moment, but first, this update from our diplomatic editor, James Bays, in Brussels.
On the third stage of his brief surprise European tour, after trips to London and Paris, President Zelensky flew with the French President Emmanuel Macron to Brussels. In the capital of the European Union, he was again repeating the same message. Thanks for all your help, but Ukraine still needs more.
Slava Ukraini!
He told a packed session of the European Parliament that Ukraine's home in the future is as part of Europe.
We are moving closer to the European Union. Ukraine will be a member of the European Union. Ukraine that is winning will be a member of the European Union that is winning.
After standing ovations in the Parliament, a short drive away, he was again greeted with applause by the leaders of all the EU's 27 nations. When he sat down with them, he laid out his specific requests.
We need artillery guns, ammunition, modern tanks, long-range missiles, modern aircraft.
At a news conference, President Zelensky wouldn't detail the responses he's received to his wish list, but he said the conversations have been constructive. He also stressed that time is critical, with a new Russian offensive expected in the coming weeks. James Bays, Al Jazeera, Brussels.
All right, let's go ahead and bring in our guests in Kyiv. Serhii Shapovalov is a political analyst at the Ilko Kucherov Democratic Initiatives Foundation. In Messina, Italy, Daniela Herrera, professor of international relations at the University of Catania. And in Washington, D.C., Samuel Green, director of the Democratic Resilience Program at the Center for European Policy Analysis. A warm welcome to you all, and thanks so much for joining us today on Inside Story. Serhii, let me start with you today. Russia launched a new wave of missiles across Ukraine in the last several hours. What's the current situation for you right now in Kyiv?
The situation is okay. It is not the first wave of Russian missile attacks. They are trying to target our energy infrastructure. So they aim mainly civilian population. They try to turn off the electricity for us. But as you can see, I am with you. I have internet and everything. So Russia fails another time to harm our civilian population. And most of their rockets were intercepted. Our general staff reported that 61 out of 71 cruise missile was shot down this morning. And it is thanks to our air defense and thanks to our partners who provide Ukraine with advanced air defense systems. Maybe it was a nervous Russian reaction to these meetings of Zelensky with EU leaders and British Prime Minister, but we are totally okay.
All right, Serhii, let me turn now to the topic of that trip by President Zelensky. How significant was the trip, and how important was it that President Zelensky was able to meet face-to-face with all these EU leaders at the same time?
Well, the main topic of Zelensky meetings with both British Prime Minister and EU leaders was to provide Ukraine with the weapons that Ukraine needs to repel Russian aggression and to liberate Ukrainian territories. In particular, it was about F-16 fighter jets which are complex and expensive weapons. These meetings are an important step in the negotiation process. And without these meetings, a political decision to provide Ukraine with fighter jets cannot be made. Similar negotiations have been going on for a long time regarding other weapon systems. Through diplomatic efforts, Ukraine convinced its partners to expand military assistance and provide Ukraine with new and more powerful systems. It was about HIMARS systems, Patriot air defense system, Western tanks such as Leopard 2, Challenger 2, Abrams, etc. So, firstly, political decisions should be made to transfer these weapons to Ukraine. And these meetings are important because in making such decisions, the emotional aspect and personal trust play an important role. And such meetings allow for this personal contact between and personal trust between European leaders and Volodymyr Zelensky.
Daniel,
if you remember...
Yeah. Sorry, Serhii, go ahead.
Yeah, if you remember, Ukraine was granted EU candidate status after EU leaders, in particular Scholz and Macron, visited Ukraine, and they witnessed the consequences of Russian war crimes. And this involved this emotional aspect. And it makes such a decisions about granting EU candidate status or providing Ukraine with weapons easier. So this is why it is important.
Daniela, you heard there Serhii talking about the fact that President Zelensky is seeking more weapon systems from EU leaders. President Zelensky also said at the conclusion of those meetings that several European leaders had expressed to him their readiness to supply Kyiv with fighter jets. I want to get your perspective on how likely you think that might be to happen.
Well, this is a very, very important and relevant meeting because for the first time, President Zelensky had the chance to meet the European leaders. Please let me remind that there is a long and established relation between the EU and Ukraine. That so the Ukraine has been part of the European neighborhood policy, and also the EU has tried to play an important role already in 2014 and in 2017. But Zelensky also always looked at the EU and the European countries. But we also have to remind remember that European countries have different preferences when it comes to foreign policy, bilateral relations, defense policies. So this means that the President Zelensky was looking at the EU, but he has also very relevant bilateral relations with some of the European countries. So this can make the difference. Obviously, meeting the EU as a whole this time can be a symbolic different thing. But at the same time, because there's more formal legitimization, and it is clear that yes, the president has prioritized those countries which have always supported more than others Ukraine, so obviously France and UK. But at the same time, we have to remember that different preferences and intergovernmental priorities may play a significant role in it.
And Daniela, just to go back for a moment to the issue of the fighter jets, because President Zelensky did say that, you know, private conversations he had with these leaders at least led him to believe that they might be willing to send military aircraft or fighter jets to Ukraine going forward. From your vantage point, do you think that is something that is more likely to be considered now by EU leaders than it was in the past?
Well, it's hard to say, hard to predict, because it's strictly connected to what I've just said, that, you know, different priorities European countries may have. In principle, as I was saying before, this is more than a symbolic meeting. So Zelensky could expect more support, more military support. But I have just heard this morning that at the end of the meeting, some political leaders were a little bit cautious, like President Macron was a bit more cautious than in yesterday, for example. So this may, we can say that in principle, it may be likely to happen more than in the past, because this meeting can make a difference. But at the same time, we always have to remember that the intergovernmental dimension is a strong constraint for European countries. So it's very hard to predict.
Russia has said that if countries were to send fighter jets to Ukraine, that that would have ramifications for the whole world. This is rhetoric that we've heard in the past from President Putin and members of his administration. But in this scenario, if that were to actually happen, if countries were to consider sending jets or were to actually send jets going forward, what would it mean when it comes to Russia, and what would Russia be prepared to do?
Well, look, the only person who really knows the answer to that question is Vladimir Putin, and his incentive, of course, is to keep us guessing and to make us think, right, that we should be, in fact, deterring ourselves from supporting Ukraine. The reality is we're now about a year into this war, and Putin has tried, and his spokespeople have tried at various points to draw various red lines. Any sort of military support, any sort of economic support for Ukraine was initially positioned as something that could lead to an expansion of the war. Any provision of military support in terms of anti-aircraft systems, then in terms of artillery systems, and then in terms of tanks. And what we've seen is that at each stage, Russia really has not followed through with some of these threats. And we have seen, again, a Ukrainian military that is capable and resilient, a Ukrainian state and a Ukrainian society that are capable and resilient, as well as a growing recognition in Western capitals that this is not a war that we can afford to allow Russia to win. It will create a world in which we don't really want to live. And so, while I think Daniela is right that there are differences of opinion about exactly how to achieve that victory for Ukraine, I think we're seeing an increasing sense of confidence from Western leaders that they can and should continue to support Ukraine in ways that will allow them to manage those risks. But that also there's an opportunity here to shift the logic a bit, right? So the tanks that Serhii was mentioning a moment ago, will show up on Ukrainian battlefields only in a matter of months. Mm. To be honest, it takes time to train people, to get things shipped, to get things positioned, to get the supply lines in place. The same will be true for fighter jets when those are eventually approved. And I do think it is a question of when rather than if. But what we've seen, particularly with the announcement from London that Britain would begin to train Ukrainian Air Force pilots, what that does is it shortens the delivery time. Right? Mm. So once we get to the point, right, where a political decision is made to deliver these aircraft, they will be able to get into the fight much, much quicker. And that doesn't just change the dynamic on the battlefield. That changes the calculations, obviously, for Zelensky. It means that he can afford to keep taking the fight to Russia. Mm. But it changes the calculation for Russia as well. Putin has been hoping throughout this that he will eventually reach a point, that we will eventually reach a point at which Western capitals are no longer willing to provide support for Ukraine. And what these meetings and these commitments continue to show him is that that point will not come until such time as Russia has lost this war.
Sam, let me pick up on a point you were making and ask you something about it. You were talking about the logistics of all this. You were talking about supply lines. There are a lot of analysts that believe that Russia is on the verge of launching a new large-scale offensive in Ukraine, perhaps in the next few weeks. But one of the complicating factors here is the fact that when the ground begins to thaw, mud is going to be an obstacle. So are Russian troops actually in a position to advance at this stage?
It's very hard to know, right? We don't exactly know what they're planning, obviously. And I myself am not a military analyst, so I listen to the smart people on this. I think what the consensus among the smart people on this is, right, is that it's going to be a difficult couple of months. The Ukrainians themselves have been very clear about the fact that they are facing a Russian military that has increased its manpower along the front lines, particularly in the east, that does seem to be looking to make progress, not, galloping progress across Ukraine, but to make marginal gains. They are also willing to take very significant losses in terms of manpower and equipment in order to do that. In an effort, I think, to exhaust Ukraine and exhaust the West. So again, this communication that that Ukraine will not run out of support from the West, that there is more firepower coming to the front line, that Ukraine will be able to withstand this renewed assault from Russia and will be in a position to counterattack. Is extremely important to the calculations on both sides.
Daniela, obviously right now we're seeing a unified EU that is bolstering its support to Ukraine. But if the war continues to grind on, if it essentially becomes a war of attrition, would at some point we see EU countries push to get Ukraine and Russia to the negotiating table?
This is very hard as well, because the EU has already lived other crises and already demonstrated very little ability to produce significant results on a diplomatic scale. For sure, what it was told during the meeting is that the fight for Ukraine is also a fight for the so-called EU values, so democracy, freedom, civilization, and so on. And this is what had been said today until today, and it was basically a symbolic support. What will happen in the future? Let me remind what happened in 2017 and 2018 with the Minsk agreement, where the EU was expected to play a major role, and in the end it was very, very difficult, and then the situation remained a little bit unbalanced for a little while, and then prolonged until today. So it is very hard for the EU to find a common position. This would be the basic condition, to have a common position. And until now, we have seen that a common position is very difficult when it comes to weapon provision, when it comes also to relations among states, as for energy dependencies of Germany, for example, or other countries in the eastern part of Europe have different views compared to other countries in the western part of Europe. So what is missing is common ground on which all member states can act. So probably we may expect some initiatives, some efforts on the part of probably EU institutions, like the Commission, for example. But it is very hard to say that the EU will play a decisive role, I would say, again.
Serhii, if things get to a point, I know we're not at that stage right now, but if things were to get to a point where the EU or the U.S. or the EU and the U.S. were to try to apply pressure on President Zelensky to get him to the negotiating table with Russia, when it comes to potential negotiations with Russia, where does public opinion in Ukraine stand on this?
In December, a month ago, the organization that I represent, Democratic Initiatives Foundation, we conducted a nationwide survey that showed that 62% of Ukrainians do not accept any compromises with the occupiers. Another 18% of Ukrainians believe that some compromises can be made, but not all compromises. This means that it is possible to negotiate on humanitarian issues such as return of prisoners of war, but not political compromises or territorial concessions. And only about 8% of Ukrainians are ready to make wide compromises, including political ones. And as we can see, the vast majority of Ukrainians believe Ukrainians understand that Russia intends to completely destroy our country and our people. The war crimes that they commit every day, shelling peaceful cities and killing civilians, executing people in the occupied territories, these acts can be clearly called genocide. Therefore, there is no room for compromise. Ukrainians want to be free people, and Russia wants to kill us. We have nothing to negotiate about. We will continue our the fight for our freedom and liberate our territory from the occupiers. We have both determination and the resources to do so. And about the behavior of our partners, I don't believe that they will start pushing Ukraine for compromises. I think that Macron and German leaders who previously, in the previous years, maybe they believed that Putin is negotiable. Mm. But now they see that Putin is non-negotiable. Mm. And he continues this war. And there is no way other than to strengthen Ukraine and force Putin to stop this war. Maybe those negotiations about tanks and public statements about tanks were such kind of signal or sign for Putin. I'll try to explain my thoughts. For example, Americans and European leaders say that we may provide Ukraine with tanks. And such a public statement is a sign for Putin that either you are stopping this war now, or we provide Ukraine with everything needed to just expel you from the territory of Ukraine. You will be military defeated in military terms. Mm. Putin didn't accept this sign, and it means that he is non-negotiable. He doesn't perceive such, not direct communication, but communication with such public statements.
Serhii, I'm sorry.
And,
I'm sorry.
That is why the decision was made to give us tanks.
Sure. Serhii, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we are starting to run out of time. I just want to ask a few more questions to Sam and Daniela. Sam, last month, President Putin replaced his top commander in Ukraine yet again. That's the third time that's happened in less than a year. Will the appointment of Valery Gerasimov make a difference, or is there any indication that it could make a difference?
I don't think it is. I mean, I think what we've seen since then has been a doubling down on the strategy that Serhii was talking about right from the very beginning of this conversation, right? And that we've seen since September, October of last year, when Russia started these waves of bombardments on Ukrainian civilians and civilian infrastructure designed to exhaust the country. It has failed to do that. They have brought to fruition the plan for a partial mobilization, at least, that will put some more manpower, and they will test the front line. But at the end of the day, moving generals around and changing the chain of command does not give Russia new technology. It does not give Russia new armaments. It doesn't really change the situation on the battlefield. It doesn't give Russia a new military with which to fight, or fundamentally a new strategy. The reality is that Russia has picked a war, picked a fight that it can't really win, and the initiative does really remain on the Western side. And there's nothing that that Putin really can do about that.
Daniela, in the past, in video streamed addresses to EU meetings and to EU leaders, President Zelensky has been critical at times of some of the European countries that he believed weren't doing enough to help Ukraine. Was his tone in his address during this tour different? Was it more diplomatic? Was he trying to show his appreciation more this time around?
Yeah, that was completely different. I mean, the tone was more diplomatic, but at the same time, I would say it was more strategic. But probably because he has perceived that this meeting was not going to be symbolic, only symbolic, because it was U.S. being very much symbolic, too much symbolic until now. So things are definitely going to be different. It is true that there were some countries, some European countries, EU members, that in the past have demonstrated to be not so much supportive as the others in respect to Ukraine. But at the same time, what we saw during this meeting was a more, let's say, comprehensive approach toward Ukraine. Obviously, some countries, I don't know, like Hungary, for example, didn't demonstrate a complete new approach. But in some way, with ways, it was a little bit more dramatic, because Zelensky was here for expecting a bit more And probably it was using a more strategic approach, cautious approach, a strategic one as well.
Serhii, we only have a couple of minutes left. I want to ask you, when it comes to President Zelensky trying to ensure that Ukraine can join the EU, do you think that Ukraine will be able to join the EU in an expedited manner? And also, more importantly, what can EU membership offer Ukraine?
The EU membership is a long-term advantage for Ukraine. It will allow Ukraine to restore after all the devastations made by Russia. And this will also help to make our country better. Because in order to become an EU member state, Ukraine needs to make reforms, or otherwise Ukraine doesn't become EU member state. And such reforms, they will not allow such things like corruption or mismanagement that were widespread in Ukraine before. I think that the EU membership will allow us to become better internally. And in future, we will live without such things like corruption that ruined us. And because of corruption, the money are spent ineffective way.
Serhii, I'm sorry to interrupt you again. Yeah. We're just almost out of time. Just very quickly, do you think that the EU will allow Ukraine to join anytime soon? Just very quickly, please.
It will not happen until the war ends, I suppose. And I think it can take up to 5 or 7 years when such reforms that are needed for Ukraine to join EU, it will make this possible.
All right. We have run out of time, so we're going to have to leave the conversation there. Thanks so much to all of our guests, Serhii Shapovalov, Daniela Herrera, and Samuel Green. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. For me, Mohammed Jamjoum, and the whole team here, bye for now.